Now, the amendments with reliance to the name that the minister wanted us to make through the bill.
Yes, but the court, what
I haven't seen those amendments, that's what I'm saying. I haven't been.
Oh, we haven't got them, but here they are.
So we need to go through that.
Yes, we will be getting this. I'm just giving you, the report covers the issues on the, in the, we're not voting on the report. I'm just giving you some of the issues that we're going to. You will get it emailed to you, hopefully, by 2, and then we'll have to vote. What's the latest time we can vote on a bill in order to ensure it can be seated the following morning in general? And then, given the particular circumstances here, yeah, what do you think is a reasonable time?
Oh, I'm not sure. So, this is the 3 days.
And remember, we're exempted from the house today and tomorrow, provided you have time to vote.
Can I just get back into the report? Let's assume we look at it now. There's no way that we can vote on the report today. We need to say that, and there's no way, Mr. Chairman, we will object. We need to look at that report properly. We need to consider it, make sure it meets all the rules. We are not going to be party to report as we vote on this today, Mr. Chairman. Sorry, we're not going to.
Well, if we don't vote on it today, if we were to vote tomorrow morning, we have, in certain situations, voted in the House on the Indian Court. My memory, unless it doesn't serve me well, we have, in some situations, voted in the House in the morning and actually voted in the House. Tomorrow, Parliament writes, there's a strike. C, as you know, we have to have huge confrontation on this problem. D, the only contested issue is the issue that's been here since 2012 and in the building 2013. It's not as if, actually, it's something substantially new from last week. All we're going to do is check that the clauses that we wanted are actually there in the form and in the wording that we wanted to check. as I understand it, unless I'm wrong, the Kumani and Momo and or Cindy Helfer might just have, from what I'm told, the committee been exchanging through emails and phone calls since the late last week and now. So Skype, it can reasonably say, is reasonably okay with it. And we're not going to vote on this, I said that. We're going to ask Frank, because he's caught up in a position. He's going to actually look at between, let's say, 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock. Now, you know, if it was something fantastically new, I can understand your reservation. If I was in the shoes as a DA, I would do the same. But in this particular set of circumstances, can't I agree with you to not say you're not in support, but to say, okay, you're not happy, you see how things pan out, and you can also expedite the procedure. And we can involve you in a facility right now. As soon as we adjourn, you get involved. And so you're there, you watch everything that's happening, you can have a say on the report, and then you will decide whether you're going to vote or not.
I'm happy to do that, Mr. Chairman, but give a warning that the process has been rushed. We have not been given sufficient opportunity, in my opinion, but let's see how it goes.
Let's not take any decision.
Okay. I'm happy to do that, but I'm not happy about the way.
No, we're also not happy, but there are circumstances. You can't come in. Yes, okay. What we could also do, maybe.
Yeah,
sure, I'm just kidding. It's a little strange, I alright, can I do just one other thing before we end the process? You see, what I'm going to make clear for this before you start is we're not going to vote on the phone. We're just going to process it. We have to take into account that people have flown in from Johannesburg and whatever. We're going to take the public hearing, right? And so, over to you, Tommy.
Chair, I want to make it a one, two, three. The consensual issue that we send there for the session of the minister with the senator. And if you don't apply to that, we would want to. But I'm worried about the position that my woman is holding about that two of the process. I think we have an investigation of this. If it's only this section of the
meeting,
so I suggest that you go through that process. I also agree that let's not vote on this afternoon because we do need to get Frank to give us his final vote on this. But before we can even decide that we can vote on it tomorrow, let's make an opportunity to vote on him today.
Yeah.
Even if even that you agree. Because for now, Magama did not explain the recognition. He's not sure whether he's not going to agree or not. Let's see if there's a free or free position of the DA, and I'll understand that.
Then we'll have to, that's why I brought a variety of reasons, and up. Why don't we vote today?
Chairman, I have to reserve our position. I can't make a decision.
All right, then basically, is this the rule we want to go to?
Okay. Okay, so thank you. Thank you, Bandit. It has been a very long journey. And I think we're not asking to flood you. We're going to give you something shortly. But I just want to sum up the way I'm understanding from the department where we are. And we do have at least one lawyer. Howard Tide is here, not as an expert on the money policy and the tax law, and grant is quite a lot of lawyers already. So I just want to start by saying, in terms of the votes themselves, so that members are clear about the process. So we have a table book, D29-15, which was basically the book that was issued by the Minister on the Trinity Council. Normally, as members know, that is the money bill, and normally to make changes, of course, we have to go through the money bill, strategic amendments, whatever the name is. So when the minister wrote, he sent a letter saying that he wants to amend on the table vote certain sections. And we then had an action that looked like this. So what changed since then, what I'm going to say? Because what this dealt with two separate issues. One is take out the retirement reform proposals that they were in the table vote to effectively go back to what the law was in 2013. I.e., that the 10 harmonization measures take effect on the 1st of March 2016. The one change that we made here was to change the threshold from at least 150,000 to 250,000. That was the one change. Then, as the committee deliberated, the issue that came up, and of course we saw that, and I'll go through all those who supported, who support, etc. We were asked then to make certain, so the vote we have today and the other thing comes in. The only change from the answer that the minister proposed, and we had to mention has changed. That means I'm in the position of the minister. And this vote is some far and some now far. What I understand is the main change has just been that the committee, okay, that if we're proceeding with the measure, given that not all stakeholders have been convinced, and certainly one consultant has come out quite strongly against, that you take that concern into account, that we do have a provision to review the amendment. So maybe, Jan, if you can just so that members know exactly what, whenever they vote, what they vote in on, because effectively you have to vote on these amendments here against this. So you want to just vote it. But a substantial change, there might be one or other technical to deal with, is on the review, and perhaps you can just focus on it. Chair, once you do that, then I'll give you all the other supporting documents that you have to show how you take certain concerns into account that you want to talk about the communication. I just want to see what's in the meeting.
Before you do that, can you just not cover ground that you covered us?
Yeah.
I mean, there are no issues that things like this pursued. This bill has already gone through a subcommittee which you actually served in. That's why I'm a bit part of that, but you look at you. You know, you look at me. I abide by the rules of parliament, whatever anybody says. Okay? You are given space to speak, right? I'm telling you, you're not being reasonable. The only issue that we make action was because the ANC didn't agree to vote because none of us know it's a public consultation. So, maybe the issue here, I don't know why we're shutting down That's why I want to start with the poll. These are the key issues. This thing isn't a, like, we haven't decided otherwise in time.
No, but Sharon, we haven't decided, I'm not sure what the other thing is.
Well, I don't know.
Because there is also the mechanism that, you know, we're not prepared to make my point. Because they were asking the subcommittee.
Yeah.
And Microsoft is telling us what happened. And they took us through
all through.
All through. So I'm not sure what is not the familiar issue. What is that still needs
to be? I agree with you, but I think I didn't know the
members. So, but maybe what we should do for the sake of progress, let's allow members, I don't know maybe to be a person, so we can do the meeting today, and then if there are easy discussions, members raise those issues as the process unfolds. Well, we are going to go out on record again. I don't think we are fair.
Chairman, this is becoming a dialogue here, and I'm surely not on, Mr. Chairman. I know we ran informally, but I won't be intimidated, Mr. Chairman. The facts are that the Minister asked this committee to make amendments in terms of the Money Bills Act. And he hasn't yet seen what those amendments are, line by line, they're required. This has now been put in front of me today for the first time. In it itself is a long list of amendments, which I assume includes the amendments that were already in the bill. I don't know. I cannot sit here and let you guys call me unreasonable, try and intimidate me. I want to just
don't be intimidated.
I don't be intimidated, Mr. Chairman. And so please let this go through the process. Let's follow the rules. And I will assess whether we should proceed or shouldn't proceed from our point of view. I mean, the NC has had a study group. You guys have obviously talked about this at length before I came into the room. You had national training officials to help you in that. I haven't had that.
All right. Pinky and Tom.
No, okay. I want to propose that maybe we go through the that trigger the case of through, and then close by close, and then we are able to continue.
Chair, I'm going to beg for the indulgence of my colleague. I know he made the very reasonable thing. Maybe in this meeting we should avoid certain words that would be to antagonize us in our relationship in trying to resolve this. We all know that in this time, we don't control the problem of Parliament. Parliament is rising tomorrow. And we only have this new development. We've gone through the legislation. When we agreed, where we differed, we agreed that we will differ. But I'm begging that let's look at these new changes and let's not go back to what we've done before. Let's look at this. If Honorable Health, and say, now I'm making a proposal to you, if Honorable Health needs to consult, what is given is representing his party. If he needs to consult, let him say upfront to us that he needs an hour or two to make consultation. On certain clauses that are new, and then you can come back. I don't know the time, Chair, I know I'm suggesting something that, so that he can have that opportunity to raise them. Because, you know, I believe in a fair debate when we just sit here and meet. Where we cannot agree, we don't agree on the basis of any intellectual discussions. Not because we don't have to. Because I don't want him to say that we are going through the process. Because we are not. We need to only look at those few. And if the presenter, when I suggested that we have lost 15 minutes of valuable time on people, and then after, maybe we can give them an hour or so. I'm making that suggestion. And you can consult, and then come back and find out.
Right, look, basically, I think we're speaking past each other. The one is the subcommittees.
It's fine. No problem.
The only issue that they need to cover is a contested aspect, which has to do with the use of the money. Last week, they tabled their criteria. How they met the criteria and the money.
I've got a whole week to look at that.
The PBO has looked at it and concluded, as a point, Jenkins, that is fine. So all we've done is put down in the report what essentially has said, and we've got a paragraph saying the PBO is represented. So, all we need to do, one pleading for, is not to cover ground covered by the subcommittee.
Agreed.
To focus only on the contested aspects of the amendment. That's what I'm talking about.
So, Chair, as the other something, so as the subcommittee looked at issues, to then look at this clause by clause and remember he has this document, the previous version. So most of these changes were discussed. Therefore, what I'm asking you to do is, since we had a discussion, you were asked, for example, to say that after 2 years, the annuitization reform will be assessed. So that change was done. So while the members report the long-term insurance proposal, I think that's been sorted out. So that kind of deal with...
Those are the two key issues.
Yeah. So exactly what change was made from the subcommittee, yeah, and it's demonstrated, reflected in the new document that's been given to us.
Chairman, last quick last one. Has this been 86? This new document.
I
just need help, Mr. Chairman, because I have what Momo said. Okay, so we had a bill, this bill was tabled. Process, whatever, get rid of it. Okay. Then the minister came along and said, hang on, guys, I want to change this bill. All right? Those changes are now incorporated in this bill. All right. So now, who has made these changes? Not the minister, can't do. It has to be in terms of the money bill of the minister.
The committee may be fine to do it with consultation, as happens with any other
okay. bill. That's fine, but where is a copy of those amendments?
These are the amendments.
No. This is the big picture. Where I want to.
you wanted to isolate it.
So I know exactly what's different from here. Okay, and that I can then be happy with it. So if I understand you that now, that's great. And then, Mr. Chairman, let's assume we're all happy, as I think we will be. Who actually proposes and seconds the amendment to the amendment?
The committee will be.
Surely it could be a proposer and second.
Okay.
The honourable member wants us to have a legal process that explains that we have amended the mandate with any clarity on it. But basically, at this point, technically, it's not the minister that we have changed.
So we are?
It's the committee.
Yes.
So he wants it on record.
The legal report?
Yeah. And then we want...
Report.
No, it's our VP, one of my number. He's done his submission.
Okay, fine.
That's what he wanted. Let
me go.
You hit with it.
What he has got there? Because the A decision was an amendment. But you cannot do the amendment in the committee. As CEO of Agri Student. What he has there on CD is a handwritten. Today, this amendment should be here. The minute the SCOF agrees on the amendment, we send that document together with this to Parliament to make the amendment to the summit.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
So
we're waiting for you.
That's why I was
asking for
government.
That's why I was asking the question. The amendments that we then to propose and taken and do are not yet in there.
No, this is like A-list.
A-list. What's this thing I'm looking at? Oh,
clarify.
Okay.
So have a look at what you have before you listen.
Yes, the
so-called
A-list.
A-list.
So 18 or 8, yeah, sorry, carry on.
Those are the actual changes we want as a committee to make to the original introduced footage. So the changes you're looking at are in, that's why they look strange and whatever the need for change. Those are the physical changes
to this one
to make to the big book.
So it doesn't include all the stuff in the race, only the change. I'm so sorry, everyone in the room, I apologize, I'm very sorry on this one, but I'm getting it.
The next step will be in the so-called evil,
yes,
which will be amended.
This one amended. To include these. Into what?
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the indulgence. I now understand where we are. I don't make you sound sick.
I'm fine, young boy.
On page one, on page two, amending the long title, because on the long title we omitted to include the term safety, that is the title of the act, because we are making changes to the term safety and the SB. That is the technical amendment. Mm-hmm. On clause C, that is on page 2, from 1 to 6, those are the amendments of which we are proposing that the effective date for the retirement plan should be 2016 instead of 2018. And then at 6, that is a technical correction. You are correcting the word because we have the current year a partnership. That partnership is without a given employee of that partnership. Usually that a partner is without a given employee of the partnership. So that is a technical correction. 7, this change is related to the retirement reform. We are removing the word retirement and the fund from the left. Pension fund, pension preservation fund, dividend fund, or provident preservation fund. On line 8, is also related to line 7. And then from line number 9 to 18, all those is changing the effective date from 2018 to 2016. And then 18, number 18, is similar to the other one, whereby we are wrong to say that a partnership, you must say a partner is over the delivery of the partnership. And then on line 19, number 19, that is a number issue because now we are changing the taking our question should be 8108. On number 20, it's similar to the other one, whereby we are taking the retirement and the fund, and also on 21 and 22. From number 22 to number 30 is the effective date changing from 2018 to 2016. And then number 31, that is where the committee requested the 2-year review period. So 31 and 32 refer to that, and the sub of the matter is on 32, which is number 8, whereby we are saying that the minister shall, after consulting relevant stakeholders, review the impact of implementation of paragraph KLOQ2RTUVWFYZ and ZP. These are all the paragraphs that we have dealt with on the previous pages of subsection 1. And then the minister shall table a report of the review contemplated in paragraph A in the National Assembly, no later than 2018. That is the term for the 2 years.
This is a proposal
we could see.
Yeah,
I'm close. In that one, we say we see old grants, whereby you said we removed the legislation before we could introduce the legislation. So we are asking for the reinstatement of the old provision so that we can introduce the regulations, because we cannot introduce the regulations without the primary legislation. And then we go to page 20 of the bill. On page 23, we are deleting the K and the E, because if the provisions are coming into effect in 2016, there is no requirement to have the K and the KA. And then we clarified in the committee last time that the K wording is already in the Act, whereby the 27 and a half percent and 350 is already legislated in the Act. We got that provision already. This one was made because we were going to have a 2-year transitional rule. And it goes to page 24, whereby you can read the word in the K and KX. And then clause 18, 3 and 4, because we are deleting the word, we have to read number and 5. On 6, this is the technical amendment regarding the minister's discretion, because the minister's discretion, whereby in terms of self-assessment, does not have an effective date. The effective date will be the date published by the minister in the subject. So you are correcting the effective date for all the ministers. And then on page 29 of the bill, which is verse 28. There was a mistake during the printing, whereby on printing 82, there was in respect of transaction in any under paragraph 32, we put there. So they are making the decisions to read broadly as if in respect only applied to 2. So they should be outdated so that the words in respect of transaction in any, they apply to both 3.1 and 3.2. So that is a mistake in printing. And then on page 31, we set a provision to correct the effective date. We say the effective date is not annual 2016. All the effective date for minister's discretion is the date to be introduced by the minister in the budget. And then it goes to page 34, which also deals with the minister's discretion, to say the effective date is the date to be determined by the minister in the budget. By putting that effective date, we have to give the number and elsewhere. And then also on clause 31, the effective date is the date to be determined by the minister of finance in the budget, because we have the number. And then on clause 15, I want the government to take into indulgence here. This is a, some sort of a technical question. It has been pointed out by Gita. This is on this. What happens is that it's on page 41 of the bill. Page 41, paragraph A and B, it's the same thing, or which is wrong. So Gita corrected us today that page paragraph, page 41, section 25, BBD, A and B, they look similar, meaning that we are teaching it, and it was a mistake from our country. We didn't read the proof. I accept the mistake. So Judah corrected us to say that now it is no longer the old paragraph A, because paragraph B is the same as paragraph A of particular the mistake. So what we are asking is the mistake of the old paragraph A, because the change is the only made in paragraph B. This was correct. So they look almost similar, because paragraph A deals with diligence, and yet paragraph A deals with foreign diligence, and B deals with diligence. So that's what we are correcting here.
I'm a little bit lost. This is page 41, section 50.
Yes.
Clause 50,
yes.
And it's 51A.
Yes.
Okay, so that's page 40.
No, it's in page 41, clause 53.
That's line
35.
Okay. 933. So if you read A and B, those provisions look exactly the same.
I'm afraid I don't see that, but I need to have a first look at it.
In page 41.
Yeah, I'm looking at page 41, section D, and then you're referring me, Ms. Simon, with your indulgence.
No,
yeah.
I'm right.
This was quoted by this tutor. It's A and B. When you read the provisions in
A and B,
yes, A and B of D.
A and B, yes, okay, carry on.
A and B.
Yes.
The provisions
in they're the same, okay.
They are the same.
Right.
So, Gita pointed that out, and they said, and now we've lost the previous A, because A and B is the same. So what was we were indicating the previous A, which is already in the A.
I understand, thank
so
you.
So it is our mistake, it is not the same.
Mr. Chairman, then just if we can just go back to 51 on page 50 on page 40, because 51 A B, and then suddenly on 41 A is back again. Is it indent? It's B A. Okay, all right, thank you.
So that is the one thing that was not there when we discussed, because this is a technical correction that has been pointed out, but that we were doing before the.
These are the copies.
No,
they copies all the
textbooks.
Yes.
And all the textbooks
in
the
university. Yes. So this is the technical correction. And then on page 43, we are deleting the word relating to same changes for long-term insurance as agreed by Parliament. So the proposal that
agreed by?
As proposed, not as proposed. As
no, I know that I'm being facetious, isn't yeah. it?
Sorry. So, basically, on the proposal, we are proposing to delete all the words from because you are deleting the word, then there is going to be a renumbering. So we are requesting the renumbering because we are deleting some of the sentences. And then on page 44, we are no longer as proposed the issue of the insurance. Hence, on your A list, it's marked out. The proposals are no longer accepted because it was debated in Parliament between Odisha and Sandam that the proposal, Odisha proposed that we should not go ahead with the proposal. So we are proposing that this proposal should not go ahead with it. We've given you the document to check changes so that you can see that.
That's what the E is, right?
Yes. The E. Whether you take this book. And then on page 44, line 31, because we are paying a VAT to the renumbering, on page 44, line 32, we are replacing the word a number with one or more classes. On line 44, instead of substantially, it should be substantially. On line 45, instead, after the good self double inverted comma, so these are all technical corrections, and then thereafter, we do the renumbering. And then we go to clause 112 of the deal. This, we are changing the effective date because the effective date is 1 March instead of 1 January. This is related to the proposal of the deceased estate. It was also pointed out by the publisher's keeper that this goes with section 9A9R on the deal, whereby the effective date is 1 March 2016. So in this one, we had 1 January 2016, so it was the deceased estate. So we have to synchronize all the things to be 1 March 2016. So if we go with section 9R, it goes together with that section. The effective date is 1 March 2016, so we're synchronizing the date there. And then this also goes to clause 112 and clause 121. And then clause 150. It also goes with the retirement forms whereby we are saying it should be 1 March 2016. And then clause 157, page 82 of the deal, we are changing the effective date from 2018 to 2016. Clause 158, 2018 to 2016. And clause 151, we are correcting the ETIF instead of section 121, it's section 128, that is a technical correction because we referred to the wrong number. And then 2016 to 2018. That's all we have here. The only thing that was not discussed previously is the issue of this and the paragraph that have to be taken.
So just to be clear, all the checking that you've done, the underlining, is the only change from the first version.
Mm-hmm.
And the subcommittee looked at floor by floor, they have in fact looked at all the other changes, except for those that
are... Except for the review provisions and the next one.
Yes.
All right. Questions, comments? I think there are only two issues, a very brief issue. I don't know that I'm telling you this. Okay, you can explain to me what it's about.
Okay.
So I'm not the only tech one guy, man.
Okay. What happened is that in the deal that was published, where it was proposing to make changes to the deal, what happened is that the deal that was published, we made a mistake of not putting it. They made changes on 48, and A, they inserted the word in the view. So both A and
B. You do proof it, but you missed one point.
So A and B now, on the published view, looks similar. They are exactly the same, obviously, it's not supposed to be like that.
So they have to remove the one.
Yes, we have to remove the one.
So that's
what A is.
Yes.
And you
can put it out.
That's your performance bonus gone for
you.
That's fine, it's not a big deal. Alright, on any of the other issues? Yeah.
Jim, I must have missed it. Did the increase in pay minimum? Is it here somewhere?
So that's what we've been people for.
It says that hasn't changed. So we, yeah, right.
So,
So it, is it in permission through you? Is it in a section that we have changed, but it remains or not? It's isolated and not.
So the way it's done is that, well, the lawyer should speak, but I don't entirely understand the way they work here. But it is there to say if
yes.
You want it to take it.
And it's not part of, Jim, again, say, it's not part of one of these changes.
No. They're giving us, what we have done, we have deleted, we are proposing to delete K and KA because they were talking about the transition and the dinner was cut. So it's proposed to delete. And the giving us is currently in the X with K because we've got it here.
The definition of the similar is in the one on the definition. Thank you. And in the table for
really put it up. 247. And then this is
the
2 minute half
deduction that you
don't change and
create. There's a missing one here,
I'm sure.
Tell me what it is.
You
read my mind.
We said we will seriously look at that for the budget because all of those will take you back. Remember the budget that
I'll see
and then you deal with the next issue.
We've heard you on that.
All right, anything else?
No.
So basically, as far as this goes, I think we need a bit of time. I also like to stop. So I think we should vote on the whole vote so we come back. We explain that each one comes as much as we can under the circumstances. And the majority of stakeholders support the amendment. And as I say, I also facilitated meetings outside of the full process. And we also point out that actually the negotiations in the light have been taking place since page 12. Domain. Because it's not supposed to be on here, so
I'm also observing from outside the people and say that it's not formal reports. Then on progress to date, under that 15 we can look at that. Then on the use of the money book Act. Frank, you had a look at that book. Okay, so what you've done there is you've drawn from the statement that special tribute issues, right? But we will put it up there about the fact that the committee ultimately takes responsibility for all the users. We then go on to basically set out the different criteria for money goes back that have been met. And then we say the parliamentary partial office agrees that the requirements of the money bill act have been met. And then the support of Collins Legal Service. And then we talk about the communication program. We have asked more. You spell out what exactly you were doing to communicate with the decision.
So after further information and so on. So we've got more info. You want to just give some medical fees with all the documents? So, Chair, on the media, in fact, do have it on me now, but I did want to circulate it and inform that I have it to purchase. What we've done is a pretty detailed assessment of what media is going to go to, how we're going to communicate, etc. And I think that obviously we're waiting for what the if and when the legislation goes through, that we will then proceed to do as a committee as a request to have a matter of time. I would suggest that to the extent that the committee would like to certainly make the plan available. And certainly comes to brief the committee on the plan. I think we should bear in mind that part of this, of course, is you know, when you want to inform members of the retirement funds, you have to work through the trustees and the trustee members. And in the second instance, just through media to deal with just general concerns that people may have or and to put forward the benefits of the legislation. So, so we have got to put it into account with the structure of our communications and so on. Let me say it would help that the unused messages, so to the extent that the father has a different message to us, I think that makes the communication harder. And that's why I think it's quite important that one, we have at least the fact put out and the statements like government trying to touch your money and so on. I should just add for the record, there's nothing further from this group. Government doesn't touch your money. Still under their trustees who run and manage the funds. So I think it's quite important that those are the kinds of things that go out and become truth when they not even assume that you've been dealt with here. I think that part of the communication is under the review mechanism that you committee has asked us that we didn't want the actually to say that we submitted the documents that we've given out. We've said a lot of this, but just for the formal record, we put it out so you can hold us to account if you feel. You can see in fact whether we are not going through the causes for what we say. That it's important for us that you have complete trust in us, that we're not misleading anybody.
About Andrew.
Because then you will find out, and the next time it will be impossible to go through the legislation. And you can see the scope, even for the other, and then to miss something in the school reading. This is very complex. And the Jews of people who come, they're not just publishers, they have their own teams of legal tech experts who are going through. So it's a useful check on us. So what we've done is, just for the record, there's a document that you said is one, which is for the tax and retirement reform. And here, let me say, this is over and above. The two documents we presented to the committee last week, which was firstly a response document under the term reform and long-term insurance matters, okay? And that draft response document is all about the broader response document we had for the other TLAC. We will merge the two, and in fact we will fix up, like, we didn't have all the MATLAB data lines, we will fix that up in the final version. It will be available when tomorrow or Thursday, soon as it all goes through the assembly. Then, Chair, we had to do the section 11 and section 8, so I think we have to consider it. So that is not new. The documents that you've had have been given. So this then deals with the advice, and then literally, we produced a question and answer format, which we use as part of the communication, which kind of goes through what the specific issues are, and an extra V which goes into just our assessment for when they take track. I think the important point to put through is that really for most workers, and I know the CPS asked me what the scenario, how long before it takes to track on the summer. And yes, sometimes we might take 2 years, sometimes it takes 5 years, sometimes we may even say 14 years. And the reason for that is it depends where you are on the income scale. For most people who aren't above the tax threshold, effectively, they will only get there after what you have to talk through. They will probably never get there or get there after 14 years. So what we have to support an extra B, there's an extra C, which just provides some of the basic, and as we presented this to the two, but it has basic information. Do you want to just talk through the two so we can understand all the hard work?
My apologies, the back of an extra B, it should be double-sided, and there should be a table there, in effect. But I'll work through the table very quickly.
We will teach you in the sense.
Yeah, I completed a version. But it is exactly what Mama was saying there. In terms of how long it will take you to be affected, if we make an assumption on whether you're going to gain employment, what the wage growth is going to be, etc., it shows how many years it will be until you are impacted. And we use star data to see how many positive time members it takes. So after, say, if I remember correctly, after 5 years, if you've got a salary of 1 March 2015 of 235,000 and you have the salary increases, you'll only be affected in 5 years' time. If you're on a salary of 700,000, you'll be affected in 2 years' time. If you're on a salary of 77,000, you'll be affected in 10 years' time. So, and then all the way up to 10 years, that is half of Provident Fund members. So half of Provident Fund members have salaries below around 70,000, and others have salaries above 70,000. And half of the members who don't have salaries below 70,000, those half won't be affected. 14 years. I can email you the document at the table, but that
will come in the discussion.
Okay, we'll come back to that. But that's the analysis we find kind of
yeah. Okay. Alright, any questions about the actual particular meaning of what we've
done? Any ideas? Chairman, I hope you can see the tongue in my cheek, but it's interesting that National Treasury refer to workers and not employees. I'm not sure who the workers are and who the non-workers are. Time's out of genius, Chairman. Let's move on.
And sometimes we were responding
to a specific
union,
yeah.
And saying the workers there are not being attracted. And of course, at the high income end, those structures we could be affected even if they want to be earning a lot of money, okay? Then, Chair, what we have is just a summary of the response document on the you know, the Treasury consultation had, and when they had option one and option two. So it just gives you a sense for who commented, and I don't know if it's given the actual permission, so we've got them here. And in addition, what we've done is we've assessed that almost everyone, well, we didn't do the final one, or CDO, the one that said option one and two. Okay. So we showed that most of them have gone for option one, because when we went for option two, which is one, we talked about cut out that try not to emphasize and you don't get a tax deduction. That this administratively that is really very hard to do immediately, and that's why we moved away from the option two that we had put into the bill. And of course there
will
were
coming around you.
Yeah, okay.
What do you say?
What
we really want to know from you is this is all recorded, right? It's plain simple. Presumably you're going to put it in some document.
Yes.
You still haven't told us what is your communication. That's what we want to know. You're saying that you can't really say this, but no. The committee told you, he's been raising the thing. Do it now. What exactly are you going to do? What is so sensitive about? We said to you, we are unhappy with the fact that whether it's understandable or not, workers, see, you can have the best thing possible for me. If I do not see it in my own interest, if I see it against my interest, I'm not going to agree with you. All this is on you to test it. When it's very clear, prompted by Bears and others, that we want you to have, and in our report, we're probably going to hold you to account. What exactly are you going to do? What's so sensitive about it? Given the importance
of now, put it down, shrink it, yeah.
Can you explain what you need to do?
I think that in this plan, it names media and so on.
No, just what are you going to do? Give us outline.
So we're going to have adverts, we're going to have radio programs.
Yeah.
We're
going to have... There's no problem, put in the report, then hold you to account. We're not asking you exactly how much you can. So what is it? We're not going to waste time. You're not going to do what you say. You can ask, and we can change our view. The committee is concerned, this is not going to write, it's not going to happen to nobody else. The committee is especially concerned that while these provisions were very successful, that the difficult of work that has found a function that doesn't mean it's this way, therefore, absolutely important. Through consultation with the relevant stakeholders, communicate simply, clearly, and consistently the benefits. And it does this, all the bridges, sorry, as I forgot about that, does this in a variety of ways, including by having meetings with the workers, making themselves accessible to queries from workers. The committee also urges National Treasury to engage further, especially with those organizations that are in disagreement with these proposals, to encourage greater consensus on these proposals. The committee has introduced this provision where we said within 2 years, right? And we will hold the executive to account on its communication and information program, something like that, right? A regular. Now, what else do you want to add there? About what do you think? Show us something beyond the banalities you say. What are you actually going to do? If there are sensitive things, don't have the document, but you write a thing to you first.
But I think you did this because
of the names of eight so remove the names. This one. But don't distribute the sentence
of
documents. I'm analyzing the page.
Okay.
So you need to see. Because it's sensitive, I think fine. If you need to think by, okay, it's now 11:25, we will need it before we vote on the report. We'll consider voting on the report, so you've got a deadline. I'm impossible to ask from 1 to 2.
Okay.
I've got an international visitor who was planned a long time ago. So let's say, if you have my desk, but I'll email by 4:00.
Yeah.
So, fine. On the issue of communication, comrades, colleagues, from another state, we must do it. Because otherwise, this thing's not going to work out. And we continue to engage the facade from as well as our with an idea. Yes, thank you.
Is this possible that it can be in the public?
Yeah, that's fine. Anything else? No. So we finish for now. Can I suggest realistically, given that Frank and I have to confer, to about two different colleagues. The thing is, we can hear the executive. It is part of it. These two. Person and as far as our technique and Bridget. Well, she's being allowed. To be fair to Bridget, she couldn't be here because of the strike and whatever. So, the two of you are going to tell us in the committee, we don't ask you to come here and say, you believe
with the amendments and say, ah, so the system of the committee wanted, you agree that the final energy budget office also agrees that the money book expertise is doing this. You're the final arbiter, not that. Because we are the holders of the fund. So you go, what's suggesting then, the House rises at 7. I would like to suggest we make it 4:30 p.m. so that we have the time to finish the process. 4:30 p.m. So we'll meet again at 4:30, yeah?
Now,
if you want to serve on the subcommittee, you're more than welcome.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Too. But now, Frank, can we just go through the procedure process? Because I'm not sure what
instruments
of referrals can be used to get into the house.
We deal with agreement on a particular point of view. To make it very simple, the minutes go from the first principle of victory would be, you know, the last one we had was the same type of people. We said, look, make it simple to the agenda. The obvious meeting, by the way, something we put on the agenda is tracking. You know, we have a tracking system, really. So we have ICTA, so we can keep cleaning our computers and we bring that in. I'm asking you to get it. But in the absence of that, what we are saying is, one is, your responsibility to say the money book actually being met and the requirement met. The second area that we are a bit concerned about, given all the vagaries of the talent here, right?
Yeah.
What would happen from now, that is the version of the bill that you will vote on, if we do a 4:30 again today, the bill that we vote on, that we will consider 4:30 again, what form will it take? Will it have just the amendments, all the amendments to the original or will it be two separate documents? Will it first be the amendment to the bill that brought to the table, and then the amendment to the amendment that brought to the Mandel's Act? We would like all on one table, is that correct? Excuse me, is that correct? I don't know what else is saying, but that's what we have to deal with. But now, we understand that you are a severe jurist. We want to deal with it. So we'll be human about us. I understand
that.
Right. So we were saying, why are you laughing?
Because they don't believe
me.
Maybe
it's
not
because David is not you become a David. You're not going to be fine. That's fine. That's alright. Also. Now, the thing is, we understand all the questions on you. You think that you can do what you're asking by 4:30? Then the second issue that arises is, they're hinting that they will not vote today. Although we're telling them, what's new? Only two things, but okay, that's if we want to vote. Then the question I ask you is, if for a variety of reasons, there's no other than the DA saying, oh, they haven't enough time, and given the sensitivity and importance of this vote, and the money goes actually being used for the first time, is it possible for us to vote tomorrow morning? Say we'll vote at 9, and we're going to debate these votes in the afternoon. Or what happens to the ABC? The ABC is being printed at the moment of the strike.
As far as I know, yes, as far as it is. Basically being printed. At least the certificate electronically is being printed. The challenge what you refer to, ideally what we want is the B version of the book.
Right.
So all the amendments,
the
B version.
B
version.
No.
No. The English which National Treasury went through now. The challenge is lovely. Chair, I will do it during this morning. I'm happy that what the committee were briefed on. But we'll discuss the sponsoring this coverage. These changes will then be effective to the amendment vote. So what you want, this is B29, it's not the B version, B stands for vote. So what you'll have is a B29B, 2050. That's a bill that ideally must serve before this committee of votes. I say ideally because it hasn't always been that,
yeah.
But practically that it's a no, we vote on this and not on A-list. Because maybe the A-list and the B version, certain venues can come in. See that? With all respect to you, there's a lot of pressure on us to do all this. But if you're happy that the B list, and that's what we will check and move out in our office, if all the committee approves this version of the event, the A-list, don't even do the B version, if you're happy with that, put it in the version in it, and the hot version. So it would be great if we can do it tomorrow, so it will be Frida the opportunity to spend the time.
We will vote today.
We vote today. I don't think we're going to be able to print the B version today, unless we speak to you about the chairperson, whether we can. Otherwise, we'll have to vote on the A list. and to say, this is what the committee wants, and we must ensure that it is there. And the debate is tomorrow morning. For the debate, the committee's report must be in the ATC, and we want a B version. If the committee hasn't seen a B version, then the B version must be in the House. Members must be able to see what they are voting on. So by then we must have a B version. There's no B version, we don't vote on something that's in the cyberspace. Not at this point in time. What you're saying, Chef, I just add that the issue of tracking and seeing that, that we are working in the system. We have a
we're
working on it as a whole.
Yeah. Are there any kinds of that process?
For clarity, Mr. Jim, and methodology. I think there's agreement on the committee on the A-list. I don't think there's a problem there. But how we start the process of getting the thing in, we've got to now votes, I presume, on the A-list, which we can do in 2 minutes. Then goes on, takes the A-list and produces the B-list. It's then printed. The committee then meets again to consider the bill to vote on it. So, correct me if I'm wrong, please, anyone, thank you for the once we voted on it, it then gets ATC.
It's correct, but it's not always that we follow that procedure or the process. We have a B version in front of the committee. In a few committees where they voted on the A because of shortly they start, and because we want to vote in the half minute time, I suspect that we're going to have to follow that process and we must make the double sure from the administration.
I was just simply the issue of voting from the process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It could take one other form, whether we vote today or not, and we feel there's no reason why we shouldn't vote today.
Well,
Chef,
can I clarify the honourable member on the 18th council? That's the way that you guys understand. As far as I understood what we used to do in the past, the electronic version will be ready, but the actual paper can be even available on Saturday. Is it still like that?
Yes.
Mm. That's what I wanted to explain. What are the parties he wants to attend?
Okay.
I want to check if I understand advocate correctly. That we have agreed on the A list, which is what an exercise that we went through. The A list gives rise to the B version. But we may not necessarily be able to see the B version. But because there's consensus on the A list, we assume all what we agreed on will translate into the B version. And as we go tomorrow into the house, what we'll be talking about will be the assumption the B version consideration shall be taken care of.
You have to have that D version,
mm-hmm. Okay.
That is what you need to do.
I wanted to therefore say in that for some reason to avail the division of the country. Is it possible?
If possible, but I have to confirm it.
We'll confirm it after.
So we're hoping to resolve all issues together. Mm-hmm. I think just clarify those issues. The subcommittee, you're welcome to join. We'll be talking over the phone. Jason, you're not here. The top part will tell the committee and you for the same decision. I'm not going to do the ones too. Also, let me close up. This is from the office.
Essentially, what I'm hearing then is that the committee is going to be, could be asked, not going to be, we're not sure yet, could be asked to vote on the B bill without seeing it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But or any other way, not seeing.
No, we will actually see what we vote on. But the form is there. Can we discuss it after the meeting?
Am I right?
Yeah, we can't. Look, we will never vote. It's impossible. It's not legal. Mm-hmm. Or not. We can't vote on something that we
haven't.
The only thing is two, maybe three forms in which you can vote. And what I'm saying, and I think really agree, is that the form in which you will vote depends on the technical capacity of Parliament in this very unusual, unique set of circumstances. So the strike being one major factor. So what I suggest is, here's a man from the ANC, Elf, because you were here, well, you can draw Elf, from yourself. National Treasury, you want to support. That's the subcommittee. and we engage through the phone and we need to react to. And our focus primarily on the report, trying to focus primarily on the ministry, and here we'll coordinate as the ministry for the ministry of the year study.
Chair, I just want to think if we need to operate in the electronic version in an event, your computer is a good.
Yeah, no, that we need to
know.
Yeah, what an option. Okay, thank you very much. That's it. We're done for now. Let's move quickly to the second part of our meeting. This is from the second part now. The fourth that you say, yes, this is from the
I'm not sure if you're going to be able to do that. sorry? I'm going to do quick opening, then Wendy is going to do this one, and Yvette is going to do her, and we'll be as expeditious as possible. Okay. Firstly, just at a very broad level, we support about this bill. We support our government initiatives to regulate and protect and promote the safe financial sector, because we are effectively regulated now as well, and we work within that. I think we're just making the point that at the SA banking sector, while this piece of this bill is meant to make it safer, make it more stable and so on, it's off a high base. That we're not, it's not as if the banking sector here is not safe, it's not stable. And I just quoted some World Global Competitive Report lately for 2015-2016 with the top for financial market development, 6 for availability of finance, 21st for public affordability of finance, and 8 for soundness of banks. Out of all of that, out of 40 countries. So we're doing pretty well. I think we must also chair National Treasury for the for the presentation, 15 million should be enough. We commend National Treasury on the way they sent out this on this. We had a number of iterations. They provided feedback on the comments that they received, and we believe that approach, this sort of approach, should be adopted by cross-government and by other government departments. I think it has a good outcome. We also submitted comments on the second draft of the bill, and by and large, most of the issues that we raised on the second draft have been addressed, and we thank Treasury for that. But we must note that the third draft is a sizable document, and potentially more sizable than the second draft. And it is an important piece of legislation, and which requires attention and consideration. So, ideally, if we have more time to look at the detail of that, it would be great. And we would welcome the opportunity to be before the committee again, if the committee does relook at, or look at it further. So, I think that we also commend the Standing Committee for its commitment to do a thorough review. And given the substantive nature and impact of the bill, we believe that we need to ensure that we do that. We would also suggest that the committee put together a technical subcommittee with which we would be more than willing to engage at the technical level to unpack any of the technical details of the bill so that we are all on the same page. We also believe it is appropriate for the committee to do an OCS tour, particularly to the UK. And we are working with the committee secretariat to facilitate meetings with the British Bankers Association and so on. I think it's also appropriate that our annual banking summit, which we have on Thursday, the BME20, from a policy point of view, regulatory point of view, and implementation point of view, so we are taking this thing extremely seriously. We've given you a detailed written submission, which you can look at leisure. We also believe that this bill provides the opportunity to streamline the current complex regulatory architecture with multiple regulators. And we believe that over a period of time, the bill must actually do that. The more, I think it's an opportunity to coordinate the regulation of the financial sector, and we believe that the regulation, total regulation of the financial sector should fall within these two pieces, and I think we should try to get to that. So that's by way of introduction very quickly. Wendy is going to do the regulator powers and those slides, and then Yvette will finish on.
Thank you, Kev. So I'm on slide on number slide 6. On slide 6. So we have had extensive engagement with Treasury and some of the regulatory bodies, and the they have constructively engaged and really taken on board many of the comments. There are a few remaining things that we thought we should raise, because this is probably the most significant piece of legislation for the financial services sector in South Africa in the last 20 odd years. And it's law we're making for the next 20 years. It's a profoundly important piece of legislation, and we believe it's important for all of us that we get it right at this stage and don't have to keep coming back and fixing it of unintended consequences later. So one of the first critical issues that the Banking Association would like to raise relates to an issue which the committee itself has been looking at, and that is what are the powers of the regulatory authorities that are established in this bill, and what are the powers of the regulators to make rules versus the role of the executive, the minister, and the role of Parliament itself. And we're not convinced the balance is right in the way this has been framed. Particular areas of the bill. The first is chapter 7, which deals with regulatory instruments. The second is in the enforcement chapter, particularly clause 141, which allows the regulators to make binding interpretations of law. I'll come back to it in a bit more detail. And the third relates to clause 153.2, which gives the regulator the power to direct financial institutions to restructure itself. We think each of these powers goes too far and is not subject to sufficient checks and balances. If you think about the implications of how these powers are exercised, they would affect the entire country, financial
who are contracted by a bank. Now, contractors is defined in the law, but very widely defined. Does this mean our IT contractors who maintain IT systems and databases may subject to certain conduct standards as well? And that's a concern where the powers and the legal issues around the standards being made for us as well. So therefore, we would like to propose that that is reviewed, that the range of issues on which regulators themselves can issue these standards is restricted, and it must be subject to a clear link, a clear market value on a clear regulatory settlement. We also believe that regulatory impact assessment should be required before new standards become effective. The next issue on slide 9 deals with clause 141, where the regulatory authorities are given the power to issue binding interpretations of law. We ask the committee to really look at this and to have it your own legal opinion, because we worry that it may be subject to constitutional challenge. The regulators are being given power, I guess they've been made rules through Chapter 7, and now they're being given the power to interpret what those rules mean. So they're acting almost as a judge and jury in some ways. Now the stated intention for this in Clause 141 is to promote clarity, consistency, and certainty in the interpretation and application of financial sector laws. We believe that if we want clarity, if we want consistency, we must draw clear law at the outset. That the law we make and the requirements based on financial institutions in principal legislation should not be vague and ambiguous and should not require these interpretations from the regulators involved. We believe this reaches the doctrine of the separation of powers and it's the role of the court to interpret the law. We also think this undermines the democratic mandate of Parliament. Parliament makes the law, the judiciary interprets it. We can't have a situation where unelected regulators make rules and then are allowed to interpret those rules and those rules are their interpretation is in binding. We don't believe this will create more certainty. In fact, we think the opposite will happen. That it could lead to a lot of uncertainty about what rules apply, how to apply them, etc., depending on the mood of the regulator or who's occupying those positions at a point in time. Again, there's a nice consultation provision that provides it and supports that, but it's insufficient as a check and balance and insufficient to address the principle of separation of powers. There's also a problem where a regulator could issue one of these binding interpretations and banks have to make substantial changes to their IT systems, their compliance controls, change a lot of forms of documents, train staff differently, and then within months, the court overturns that interpretation. And so we've engaged in proof of expenditure because the regulator is exercising the power that it actually shouldn't have at the beginning. The third issue on slide 10 relates to the capital dealing with financial conglomerates, which I'm not sure if we've had a time to look at in its work last week. But Clause 163 gives the regulator, in this case the Prudential Authority, the power to direct a financial conglomerate. So any of your big banking or insurance groups in South Africa to restructure itself. Now to restructure a corporate is a massively significant exercise, something that should really be used as a last resort. In competition policy, breaking up a company is an absolute resort in competition policy. For example, if the Standard Bank Group was directed to Liberty, it would have massive implications for investors, for workers in those companies, for customers of those companies. And we really think it should be subject to the most strict administrative justice provision. I'm not saying don't have it in there. We understand there's a good policy reason to give the regulator the power from a risk management point of view. So we have made some proposals around how to strengthen the checks and balances and the procedural justice requirements here, and I won't go through those in a moment. Moving on to the next issue, which relates to the supervisory approach adopted throughout the law. This is something that we really welcome, that the approach to supervision going forward will be risk-based. So that the regulators have got to focus on the big fish,
they've got to look at where are the real systemic problems, the things that can bring down the financial sector, the things that can cause really significant harm to large groups of vulnerable customers. We don't want a situation where the regulators are so stressed in trying to catch every small player, every small contravention of the law, that they take their eyes off the prize and they take their eyes off where the real risks are. And when you go on your day trip to the UK, it might be useful to look at the role of the financial services authority before they have some teeth, because accusers being exactly this, of focusing so much on the smaller things that they fail to see at Northern Rock on the brink of a bank run. Now, in many cases in this bill, it says specifically that a risk-based approach must be used by both the Prudential Authority and the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. But there are many examples throughout the bill where the issue is not subject to tested materiality or reasonableness. And lawyers being lawyers and compliance officers being compliance officers, they're going to interpret this quite strictly. So you're actually defeating the point of a risk-based approach. And the number of examples of this, I'm not going to go through all of them, I'd like to raise a few so you can understand what we're saying. In the definition of financial stability in the law, financial stability means, amongst other things, that financial institutions generally provide financial products and services without interruption. Now that could mean that a couple of hours of your internet banking system going offline is an interruption of service, and potentially mean that financial stability is at risk. Now clearly, that we wouldn't want to signal that to the market. You know, at one bank, if fixed within a couple of hours, even if it's 24 hours, is that really a threat to financial stability? So we think words like a significant disruption or a material disruption needs to be added into the particular definition.
Fine, just to alert everybody that this is an initial point. That we intend to, this committee is taking a position, and other committees in fact, that we are public hearing in July, in some form or another, formal summer. We engage with you. We will do a daily vote on the bill. If you are a little bit like us, are you? We will ask you what you think. But finally, it's Parliament to decide. Not the executive, not stakeholders, Parliament. Okay? So we like that you are taking a position to provide a reset the framework and the term. And we're not going to be bulldozed by anybody. So let me just tell you, you're coming to the ground quite well, but you're elaborating. In fact, some of your things have picked up. So I can give you 5 more minutes.
Okay.
And you can carry on beyond 1 o'clock, actually. I have to give you guys 5 minutes. I think you can leave your chair when I'm gone. You can leave your chair. So can you leave your chair? I have to leave at 5 to 1. I have an international visit announcement. It's not going to be here. So I will leave at 5 to 1. And then what we will do is, you carry on, I don't see a problem. But there's one practical event I need to raise. I'm pleading with the committee because the program has been changed for tomorrow. And we're debating in the morning. We need to arrange the debate in the afternoon. And it's still the case. Because we want the financial stability board, the financial stability board, and very importantly, staff to be there. So one option we can is to meet on Thursday. We can be slightly early, 9 to 11, so we're done with this. Otherwise, I don't know how we're going to manage tomorrow. So can members think about that? Okay, back to you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to recognize my section here and a little bit area.
The change is often a meeting the consequences, such as creating uncertainty before you reach a vote, if you are still ready to do it, or whether or not they are about to get to the upcoming. Here's an example. The wonderful client is a person who directly or indirectly, alone or together with a related or interrelated person, holds a subscription to see, or a lower percentage is maybe prescribed by regulation. Can deem a person to be a significant owner, whereas the international standard clearly states that regulation is a clear and defined significant onus in controlling interest. Investors, whether the money market requires legal certainty on whether they will be regarded as a significant owner and whether the investment will require regulatory pre-approval. Investors that are regarded as significant owners will clearly consider and deliberate their investment decisions. This clause is 106, 1C, 143.5, 157, 182, and 257 clearly sets out the duties and responsibilities of the significant owner. Any uncertainty in this regard will be detrimental to the financial sector and will impact on the ability of financial institutions to attract the desired caliber of investors. There is always an expectation that significant owners will recapitalize gains in need and speedily. When there is uncertainty, this will also impact on portfolio flow. That's the meaning. On page 16, clause 155.1 and clause 156 are inconsistent and create confusion and further uncertainty because clause 155 actually says what is defined as a significant owner, whilst what clause 156 states that a regulatory authority may declare whether or not a person is a significant owner. We therefore recommend that clause 155 be rephrased as we highlighted in, and I won't go into the detail. Another significant concern for us, Chief, is that in clause 257 and clause 258, if we do a significant owner contravene the law, there is a fine that can be payable. And that fine can be determined as 10% of the annual turnover of a financial conglomerate for such a contravention. Just to put it in numbers, it could range between 8.5 billion to, say, 6 billion per institution, which could make up about 50 to 35% of the earnings of that institution, which really could be a financial instability, and you saw what happened when we had everything there. So these are various clauses and percentages, Chief, that we believe
to be
equal. You don't want to write, you don't want to write on the banking system, Chief. Moving on to clause 17, that's on compulsory disclosure of licenses. The disclosure requirements regarding licenses pose practical challenges. Financial institutions such as banks are required to hold a large number of licenses, including others, a banking license doesn't provide it. So banking institutions have got a myriad of licenses to hold. From an operational perspective, it is impractical and will be impossible for financial institutions such as banks to disclose all the licenses that they hold and for the licenses that they've been suspended in all its business. You can think about all the documentation, letters, stationery, billboards, clothing, everything, to make such licenses available in all places. Thinking about the number of branches, the pervasiveness of the banking sector, or in terms of structure across South Africa, all we ask in check is that referencing the objectives of the bank, there should be a balance and fair and practical execution solution that needs to be fine for the we put the recommendations in how we recommend that the law should be changed, and then we try to cover two persons. The definition, read together with the definition of a governing body of the nation. The definition of a governing body is a criteria or a trust which unintentionally result in the inclusion of persons such as trustees or testamentary trusts. Now, we've listed a few measures included. It is clearly incorrect to include these persons if they have no specific or material influence in terms of the bank. In terms of slide 22, we've highlighted what we recommend should be considered, and we've also come up with a proposal that the definition should have include the material or strategic or significant influence be considered. And then this year, lastly, on the FMAF slide 21, just to say that ASA supports it. We support that it should be in the primary legislation and not subordinate legislation. There is, however, a concern between political in terms of the distinction between the central counterparty and the clearing house and how this should be dealt with. It is clear that the central party must be an independent clearing house. Consequently, there needs to be amendments to the FMAF so to make sure that it can be licensed as a central counterparty only, and we put that the detail out there. So really what we're asking is that the recommendation is that there could be, should be consistent, consequential amendments to set the clause 47 and 48. But the most important thing we're asking, Chair, is that this amendment should explicitly say that there's a 5-year transition period that we need to actually implement to avoid any disruption to the market.
Thank you. Atisa, please.
Members particularly were concerned about the constitutionality of this act. To that end, we have engaged
Secondly, the applications for rulings under the Tax Administration are usually made by the taxpayer, not by SARS. The taxpayer wants to engage in a transaction. This is SARS in advance and says, I'm proposing to do this. What will your ruling be if I act on that? And then you get a ruling in advance. The essence of it is that the ruling is binding on SARS, not binding on the taxpayer. When you, under the Tax Administration Act, you ask for a ruling, SARS says, we will interpret it this way and we promise to interpret it to say you can rely on us. Under this bill of terms, the ruling which is made by the financial institutions has not been made of the credible institutions. So we do support, or maybe we'll say we, just me that there's a great deal of good sense in the notion of guidance to the parties affected, so that they know when their grant is going to happen, that does provide consistency and clarity. The earlier track provides for guidance when the issues of a long time ago. That's very important. But we suggest that as far as binding these are concerned, the regulator can only bind itself, it can't bind somebody else's lobby needs. And that, the problem is compounded by the fact that what the bill says is that if the ruling is subsequently set aside by a court, it only operates perfectly. In other words, whatever has been done under the ruling was in force all the time until it was changed by the court, even if it was, whereas if the court had just done it, it would have been valid from the beginning. So there's a problem of prospective retrospective. You can have a situation where a ruling is made, the financial institution is bound, and it will be bound for a time. When finally it gets to court a year or 2 years or 3 years down the road and gets a ruling from the court, but the ruling is now invalid, that doesn't validate what happened in the past. And any validate things go forward. It seems to me that that's the rule of law. That you can have a statute that says something which is invalid remains law. And it remains in the meantime, he's not accusing that. You do know that there are circumstances when people say, this was invalid, but there are reasons why we can't rewrite it. We can't unwind what happened. And what has been forced at that discretion of the promotion of the Justice Act. They have a discretion under Section 171 and 172 of the Constitution to say, well, even though we're unlawful, we won't make the finding retrospective, but say we must be forced. But to have a law which says that it will always only be prospective and not have a retrospective effect seems to me to be a principle of legality of the rule of law, which is part of the core of the Constitution. So that's the second thing we want to discuss. The third issue, so we suggest that practical suggestion is guidelines should be very helpful. If there's a need for binding rulings, the model should be followed is one in the Tax Administration Act, which doesn't enable a rulemaker to make a rule which binds somebody else. In other words, the rulemaker can't make binding rules of finding interpretation. Then the third issue is the issue of the tribunal, which is a financial services tribunal, which does raise a very difficult problem. The Financial Services Tribunal is appointed on it, and the bill says that it will judicially review decisions made by the regulators and other bodies. Now, that would raise that utility, not so, because the tribunal is a court. The tribunal can't judicially review decisions because the tribunal is not a court, nor is it a court-like body. There are provisions, Section 33 of the Constitution, that refers to bodies which are similar to courts. Just under the section. Section 33 says, in the Constitution, says that national legislation must provide for the review of administrative action by court, or where appropriate, an independent impartial tribunal. So the question is whether we have an independent impartial tribunal. The same as in Section 34. Everyone has the right to seek society by court, or where appropriate, another independent impartial tribunal. The problem is that the tribunal, as constituted in the book, will not be an independent tribunal. I don't mean that the member of the government doesn't meet the requirements which the Constitution will set for what independent tribunals. For example, the members of the tribunal will be appointed by the minister, standing alone. They're appointed by the minister in order to adjudicate the legality of the conduct of the regulator for the administration of this company. So the minister is accountable for the tribunal, and then has the power to appoint the judges to the tribunal and regulate the activity.
Secondly, there's a problem in terms of office. When you have a 3-year term of office, or a 4-year term of office, and members of the tribunal are serving at will, at the will of the minister, then they're subject to the minister, then they're not independent, which is all over the world. Because people will say, well, what happens to my job? I'll give over those meetings, and this will help that they will do. So if you don't have security of tenure, you don't have independence. Thirdly, if you don't have, the minister determines how much the members of the tribunal are going to be paid. Now, you can't have somebody who's a party to the tribunal determining and changing the conditions of service of the judge. That's also consistent with the local and the tribunal. There's also a field, of course, which is a problem. But there's a host of problems with the notion that this is an independent tribunal that is contemplated by the Constitution, Section 34 of the Constitution, that is not to say that there is not advantage in having a tribunal of this sort. There is a great advantage in having a system of tribunals which take a first look at the problem, and they have a first look at the problem. Absolutely, no problem with that, but the Irish and Roman practice internal body to its that is not. And as far as take place, the difficulty of the world is that the tribunal, the board is keeping consistently observing what the tribunal is going to start with the tribunal. If the tribunal is there and if the court is to access, nothing the tribunal does includes the right of access to a high court, like a padre and a high constitution, then there's no problem. Then it's an administrative tribunal, so the minister of the tribunal, legal expertise, other expertise, and it would be a very useful function. But what would be fatal to the tribunal is if it is intended to be substitutes. The problem is that there are parts of these rules which we've identified in our thing, which suggest that this is a credit course. It's a policy reading of the statute policy of the Constitution that doesn't create a permanent constitution file. So what we suggest is that the practical condition by all we keep the tribunal is likely to be a very helpful body. It's a trade in terms that this does not detract from the power of the high court to review. The second problem, of a purely technical kind, once you accept that it's a tribunal product, an administrative tribunal, anybody who has a complaint about a decision which is made, first have to go to the tribunal before they go to court. That just says you have to exhaust your internal remedy before you go to court. So you have to go to the tribunal, pay your right there, depending on whether you can go to court. That's again not a problem at all. That's a long established in our law that's here in our law for many years and many. The problem is that the tribunal's powers of review are not the same as the court's powers of review. The tribunal can review only on limited grounds, which are more narrow than those in touch. So if, for example, I've got a regular court makes a decision, and I've got a problem with that decision, it may be reviewable under Padua, but it may not be reviewable before the tribunal. The only question is that I have to go to the tribunal to ask the tribunal to set aside and if I doesn't have the power to decide. So can I go to the and the legal so we suggest the factual suggestions. Just give the tribunal's part of the view. So tribunals, I'll make the tribunal's grounds of the view the same as the tribunal's grounds of the view. If you look at the rules, tribunal's part of the view. The tribunal's part of the view of the court can do good as well. So that's the first issue. We think it's solvable by making clear that this is intended to shut up the court. If it does, if the court thinks that they think that this is the official view, that part of that would be the fair constitution. It would be able to do that as well. So it needs to be stated that this is one more service of the constitution. Finally, the liability of directors, which is dealt with in paragraph 32 of our what the bill says. Clause 266.1 is that the phrase, the financial institution commits an attempt to conduct with the financial credit for law. Each member of the governing body of the financial services financial institution also commits the offense. So at the moment, the institution of the offense, the director is automatically committing the offense, unless it is established that the membership will read and practically invest in the prevention of the institution. That reverses the onus. In other words, the institution is that every director
there'll be personal interest in doing what else. But if he or she can prove it, he or she supports it in practical sense.
No, thank you very much. I think the comments that Mr. Chukwuka are very useful. However, the only part that I think is not very clear to me is it's clear as though there hasn't been sufficient attention being paid on what the current system or the regulator, the role that is played by the current regulator, and vis-a-vis the one that is in session two. I'm not sure whether we have done an analysis of comparing the two roles so that as we move towards the Twin Peaks, at least we would have thought through these issues very carefully. Because I wouldn't like a situation where, and now I'm just posing it to you, a situation where the very beautiful records of us, of the South African financial sector that we currently have, we kind of put it aside and then start focusing on the things that they undo what we are doing right. So I'm saying that area to me is a bit of a concern. And I think the other thing that I thought about is also important is that when you are saying the powers of the regulator shouldn't they become too intrusive from what we're saying. I need to understand in which way are we saying so. Is there a case that you probably have because it appears ahead to saying that when we go to King Peak they will be going to the UK and that we should be looking at that. Is there something that you already know that we ought to know about the situation where the role of the regulator goes above and beyond? Not in my own view, I really do think that in South Africa, if you compare with international cases, we've done pretty well. I mean, except for this issue of access, to me, I think there has been a lot that has been working well, and I don't think we should miss that in the process of doing the treaties. Because treaties is really about separating, the prudential and the market conduct, and I think we should really be focusing more on that than trying to amend the things that have been working as well.
Anybody else? Okay, very quickly, it's not the, given the gravity of what is different about the, about the, given the gravity of what happened in 2008, right? Given the huge consequences it had, many people argue the 1.2% of the room, very intense. Job losses, well, partly. Not everything can be attributed to what happened here. And given the failure of the banks to govern themselves and regulate themselves, it could be argued that these are reasonable measures. They're not. Also, that is an actual crisis, you can argue to us. What is intrusive? What is
intrusive?
These are like federal regulations and international standards that are being used across the globe. So let's show us what particularly orderless, what particularly over intrusive, over whatever the words are, the three words, over. So let's show us that Treasury is deviating from the international norm. Now, it tends to be acutely aware how important the stakeholders are, as others will appear before the committee will feed the head. And we also feel that we need to do the same thing that we don't have to. Then on the issue of interest banking council cloud budget, a banking association, it's a wonderful goal. We make a lot of consultation. We commend the national treasury. I don't know if you want to spend more hands in the shaping of those formulations, but I think it's quite the reason to have from the because we have these regulations that, we keep giving this to the people, not enough consultation. But in this circumstance, I think that would but it's the nature quality of the consultation, also the depth of it, and the extent to which reasonable decisions put by the stakeholders have been seen. Now, the question that arises then is, did you actually raise these issues with National Treasury? How was their response? Did National Treasury attempt to reply? There are the issues, but I think I'll forego it. I'm a bit surprised that we don't engage more. But we have been looking at the source. And we want to report by first, by reason of the bill is done. We have taken this issue up about the relationship between the regulator, the legislature, and the executive. Sometimes it's been raised by members who feel that the minister intervenes from a different angle from what you're taking concerned, that the minister should have more of a say in the framework within which regulator may decide. But of course, for the minister to give me, I don't think he has to get part of the agreement. So in a sense, one of the things, sure, it's actually different some of the similar concerns the committee itself has raised up till now, and you raising. Some of it overlaps, some of it is raised from a different point. But having said that, let me hand over to you, please, as well.
Thank you.
Chair, I think we need to reform. Can I just take the issue about the current regulatory environment and so on? I think in fashioning our response, I mean, our initial interaction with National Treasury, I think that we do recognize that the proposed regulatory environment does actually improve. It's not destroying what's in place. It's building on what's in place. It's keeping up to international best practice. And it does give the regulatory authority, both on the market conduct side and the prudential side, an overview of the entire financial sector, because that's how business happens. There's bank assurance, banks sell insurance, insurance companies do credit. So there's quite a lot of interlinking between the businesses, and I think the peak gives the market conduct and prudential regulators an overview of those businesses in a holistic way, and so they are able to regulate them far more effectively in our view. So we don't think it's destroying, we think it's building, and that's why I said earlier that it's off a high base that we're actually moving a bit beyond that and towards international best practice. So we quite happy.
In terms of what we I think one of the reasons why South African banks weathered the global financial crisis well was because we had a very, very tough prudential regulation as well. We were really engaged in intrusive supervision. So the Reserve Bank walked in regularly, sits with the board, sits with senior management, and interrogates lots and lots of things about how the bank is managing its risks in different areas. And I think we're well in line with international standards in that area, and in some cases we may be above international standards, and have been early adopters of Basel III, for example. We were one of the first 7 countries that got Basel III, ahead of the countries that wanted to stay caught in financial crisis in the first place. But on the conduct side, things are different. Conduct is not regulated so much at an international level. And we have to make choices about how we supervise conduct that are relevant to our economy, to our market, and the needs of many of the customers or financial customers in South Africa. And an example of the kind of power that we may be giving to the conduct authority is around something called the Retail Distribution Review. This is about the payment received to insurance brokers and financial advisors and moving away from a commission-based system to a fee-based system. Now, there's a lot around this that's very good and welcomed and is good for customers. But what happened in the UK is when you move to a fee-based system, you excluded the lower end of the market. And a number of banks actually just went out of that market, so it's not serviced anymore. The lower income customers are not receiving financial advice. So that's something to look at, how these things can go too far. Another example is a lot of conduct supervision is about do customers get the right outcome? Are customers treated fairly? Do they get sold the right product to meet their needs? That's what we must focus on, not as a long list of rules per se. Because you can meet all the rules and the customer can still get a bad outcome. So we really support the shift in conduct supervision to focusing on fair outcomes for customers. So what's happening in some of the proposals around this is actually to say some of your corporate structures are de facto unfair and we're not going to allow them. So we're going to force you to break up some of your business models and some of your corporate structures. We think that is too intrusive and there's not strong enough reason to do that. The right outcomes for customers can be achieved in less intrusive ways and we should be focusing on the outcomes and not necessarily picking 100 rules setting standards.
Good. Okay, Because remember that this is a group, I'm not airing an opinion yet, I'm just trying to put up a scenario. Because we're trying to put up a set of rules that would not only protect the consumer from certain conduct that undermines basic human rights of knowledge of the color that comes to earth. But to also have a person in the specific get talking about the negotiated extent of what a consumer might need to be in this context. Then how does this enable that with this entire both decide without compromising innovation and all that? But we need to take it. Intrusion is no matter of check. Until it is applied constitutionally. So we're going to have a good discussion. I suspect that we're going to meet again with the sector after our observations and come to decisions and agree of that we all succeed. Principles that have been laid based on what Natasha has been saying. And what so I'm using this as a prelude or part of the things that we're going to discuss going forward. I'm not even touching the entirety of the sentences because there's different interpretations that I'm not yet going back to that one. I'm going to consider another.
I can see who will represent the ANC in this
country.
It's opening a margin. I mean, they're not going to have that.
I'm asking you to
vote
for the ANC
coming from. Basically, like you said, if you look well in the local imagination, nothing you ask for you will get.
By the way, it's not a lie, but it's a facetious remark, right? Politically, look, I don't know if you know, it's not prompting to ask, right? You see, it may be true, but just the moment you are coming, right? They claim that by international standards, the provision for the conduct of collective law is overdone, right? So, now, even if that's true, because you're going to tell us this moment, maybe it's because in our country, we have not the same financial literacy level that we have in the fund industry. So, other than this, and here we have to protect the poor and the disadvantaged more than, say, in an advanced industrialized country. If, at this stage, you know, we are just exploring, as Tommy says, it's like exploratory, it's like brainstorming. We don't have, like, any, we would be foolhardy if you want to have society for these countries. So, nothing you say, isn't the problem with journalists, is that they quote us with the structures produced. So I should choose one of the sentences. Very gently. Being an initial foray into this point, having not actually considered the matter fully, and having not had the wisdom or advantage of collective input, the sentences leading to a significant number of inputs here, if you have to find a very comfortable set of arguments, it is moving towards saying, here and there may be the committee will be, but my sense is, with light up the regulation, this thing about, hey, don't be so intrusive, you're going to find it hard, I think, you have to present a much stronger argument than you stand now, that, hey, this is true. There are parts, I think, that you might agree, but the overall thrust is, the subconduct is already good. You're going to find it very hard. Let me put it this way. The unions are going to be coming in. The NGOs are going to be coming in. And they will come to you for money to fund them, You know, we want you to get civil society, not just industry. So what I'm saying to you is you have to come with much more formidable argument, but my closing hand up.
No, I just wanted to check. Sato seems to be taking issue with the compulsory disclosure of licenses. Now, I want to know how do they balance that with the constitutional provision of principle of transparency. Because that also impacts on the customer. The customer has to know. Because if you are saying we have to be, we as much as possible, let's rather focus on the outcome and how the connect is impacting on the customer. But at the same time, we are raising a range of operational issues around the disclosure. And to me, I see a contradiction there. Because if I'm not going to be able to understand what sort of license you have at the bank and what sort of product that may be selling to me that I'm not aware of, I think there is a challenge there. Maybe you will have to think about that, especially because we are going to be getting other, you know, stakeholders, other NGOs and so forth, we will be very cautious about the points that you are raising about the issue, taking issue with the disclosure of licensing.
Thank you. And then I can hang up the thing and then see if it's
Now, what's very difficult to say for us between getting that type of power in a way which is not necessarily going to lead to an over-descriptive dictation of how to do your business. As I said, it's an open, I mean, in terms of whether it's consistent, I think it is, because those jurisdictions where they have been moving and have been working on it, there is that precedent. We need to make sure that we just implement this in the right way.
And I think just the other issues related to the other aspects, you know, when that deal was talking about, if you look at some of the provisions on governance, some of the problems, I think they do need to be kept in balance. And these are also not the issues of significant harm. So, you know, even though, and so I think those are areas we're open to looking at. So I think certainly after we've done enough of regulations, you know, that you can't assume good faith on part of the regulators, you know, the regulators, you can't assume what happens when there's bad faith and hold regulators accountable. So I think there's certainly strategy very open on these issues. And I think whilst we've had conversations, perhaps certainly when you get these business discussions, they probably need more consultation. And I think at the moment it's interesting, I think, even for us to just hear the input. Because even when you have your business consultation, whilst you might get lawyers, they don't get maybe such evidence. It's only when you have a final bill and it's there that people then suddenly look at it much harder. So I guess also,
On the constitutional issue, though, I think in the majority of it, the concerns raised, what you're saying is being it should be like that, actually, is how it's intended to be. So, for example, on the role of the tribunal. So, I think in going through that further, in both cases, we would see that actually we need to, it's not that we have an adherence concept we agree with you.
Let me just say, we are still, without certainly not undermining the financial process, talking to players. So some of these issues, because we didn't want to also delay the vote, delay the vote. So certainly with a lot of these, we will complete, but we just want the committee to be aware, to talk to the key players and see how we can resolve some of these issues so that hopefully by the time you comes to Parliament, some of the issues could easily be hopefully solved. But that is that sometimes what they say is what we actually can anyway. So, of course, another point to make, banks aren't used to market products. Of course, we're not market products regulated.
Yeah, and of
course. The national credit regulation, the credit, the retail credit. So we are now trying to cover new ground. There was a Gali committee realized. As I said, a lot of central bankers are very bad when it comes to looking at the conduct. That's why we split it away.
If I may just assure the committee that the banks are not at all asking for light touch regulation, and we've seen the consequences in other jurisdictions. What we're asking for is smart, effective, and appropriate for our economy. So we definitely are not averse to the conduct regulator at all. We welcome it, and we welcome the focus on conduct. It's not something that we're against at all. We are subject to multiple conduct regulators because most banks also are regulated through the SFG under the FAE Act as well. And we think bringing it together in the conduct authority is a very good initiative. And also, I think further down the line, Treasury will be bringing you the Conduct of Financial Institutions Act, which will pull a lot of this together, and that's also something we welcome. We just think that it's about balancing a number of things, which is difficult to do, and we appreciate that. And just to also say that it's not just in the quantity of consultation that's been good, it has been the quality of consultation. Treasury has engaged with the issue. And also to give the committee some comfort, the issues, this bill and the conduct issues, are being discussed in NEDLAC, where the trade union constituency anyway is part of that and has been raising this issue. And hopefully NEDLAC will table its report on that consultation that we can have a look at these and see what some of the issues are.
You want to say something?
I want to just make one comment on one of the issues that were raised in terms of this project. So we are proposing that the regulator that authorizes or issues the license, then when they issue the license, tell us how they want it to be disclosed. Instead of covering a broad disclosure, which can become interesting. Because we're not saying it must be disclosed. We can say how the disclosure should be in discussion with the
regulator. Maybe what we must also note is stakeholders to the committee together with Gregory is that we have agreed on a few things. What we have also said is that this is the beginning of other engagements going forward. We have agreed on a number of workshops that will take place dissecting the bill into different parts and then be able to familiarize ourselves and verify certain things not so deep. We've also there's a proposal that there must be a technical committee, if I'm not wrong, from BASA, which the chairperson also spoke to, which we think it will be work in progress. Like we're saying, Momo, nothing stops you to continue to meet with BASA, to continue to meet with ASISA and all other critical stakeholders. So to clarify most of the things, and by the time we meet again, there's convergence in most of the issues where there were gray areas and so on. So there's an open door policy from Treasury, and I don't think you'll need a standing committee to mediate on that, because you are able to meet from time to time, and I think Treasury has been doing very well in that regard. So you don't have to wait for us, you can still continue to do that. There's another element, Momo, when we just spoke. It will be very interesting for us to hear as we engage with the stakeholders. You remember that small thing of software and your retailers? Let's not leave them out, Momo, on the engagement. You know, your shop right in all these things where people like to send money to, especially in the rural areas and so on, because those are also financial products. So as you look at a range of stakeholders that you want to engage, let's not leave some of those who are very close to our ordinary people, so that they too can be able to air their views around the whole issue of okay. Unless there's any other comments from members of the committee.
Yeah, I just
wanted
to ask a question. Yeah. Yeah. I'm
not sure that Asita did and Gata did.
Yeah, only two.
In terms of the program, it was Asita and Gata. Yeah. Unless if.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
I know the committee didn't want to get an initial view, and I think the point is that we ensure haven't been given, although they are limited, and I think they've also asked outside. So I think just to bear in mind that this has been a very quick input, so even from the people, I was there early next year, the inspectors from the workshops, you might still want them to come and, you know, but there's more time to deal with issues. Because I think that we certainly need to in this program. Second thing, I'm hoping that the chair, now that he's not here, there's a new chair, I'm hoping there won't be a sitting tomorrow. I don't want to tell the staff and everyone to come tomorrow. They each put an important workshop they had. So we can discuss it later, but it will help. There's a clear, it's not on tomorrow. Because I think you're just speaking to the house. It's sort of something that people are really need now that they're maybe getting there. I have spoken to the staff and to the I'm not saying it will be difficult, but it won't be possible to get what we want. So we'll do that in the form of a workshop. If the members want, at least just before they go to the UK, we can do something if you like, but just more informal, and then they can come back, I guess, later. And then look, the door closes the street, so there is difficulty about who comes.
I think we have a session around 12 o'clock for today, of course. Yes, maybe the, after this meeting, engage with the chair and highlight some of those things and let's see. But the reason why we are sitting here, just behind Parliament, is for us to be able to rush quickly if we have to go. But I'm saying, I hear the logistical part.
Not as yours, though.
We have to be there. No, we fully agree, but take the matter up more.
Yeah,
so the
just have to tell people not to fly and so on, and
some
of them will be fine. Yeah. Yes, but I'm saying it's not the most important thing to get the winner. The possibility of having a very sad and busy. The most important thing I have to say in my position, I'm talking about my number and my life.
I wouldn't want to be there, eh? Not like you. But let's not.
Yeah.
Let's finish, please, because we are out of order. We'll deal with it amongst ourselves. Let me take this opportunity, in the absence of any other comments, to thank all our stakeholders for availing themselves to be here. As a committee, we welcome input from time to time, so that by the time we arrive at a decision, we can have consulted broadly and then be able to take an informed decision in the best interest. Thank you very much.
Thank you
very much.
I guess the